Hello and welcome to Let's Build, the podcast where we talk about building strength, stability, and self-reliance through affordable housing. I'm your host, Kirsten Pittman, Community Outreach Coordinator for Central Valley Habitat for Humanity in Bridgewater, Virginia. And today we're going to talk about green building initiatives and how they fit into an affordable housing model. We'll cover the owner-renter divide, and when it comes to energy-efficient technology, we're going to give you a rundown of green building standards and the impact that a more energy-efficient home can have for low-income families. It's hard to believe we're already on episode 4 of our podcast. Thank you so much to all of our listeners that have given us a spot in your everyday life. We're hoping we continue to grow and spread the word about affordable housing. Do you have a particular topic related to housing you'd like to learn more about? If so, head to our socials and let us know what you'd like us to cover next. We're very interested in talking to the community about what they want to hear and giving them details about what Habitat does and why affordable housing is so important. With that, let's get started. Going green has been a popular topic in the United States and all over the world as we recognize the impact that our technology and industry has on the environment. However, green technology can save more than just the planet. It can make owning a home more affordable. We've established that many low-income families, 70% of families in the United States to be exact, are already paying more than 50% of their monthly income on housing, when the appropriate number is less than 30%. In previous episodes, we discussed the issues around the affordable housing crisis and the financial, physical, and mental burden it puts on individuals living below the poverty line. However, on top of the 50% they spend on housing, they also have associated costs for energy use. The items that they use to maintain livable conditions in their home, such as electricity, natural gas, and other fuels, is called an energy burden. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, low-income households spend a larger portion of their income on home energy costs than other households spend. One recent study found that low-income households face an energy burden 3 times higher than that of other households. High energy burdens can threaten a household's ability to pay more for energy and force tough choices between paying energy bills and buying food, medicine, and other essentials. These energy burdens can vary greatly between states because things like climate play a large part in how much energy a household uses. In the 5 states with the highest low-income energy burden, Mississippi, South Carolina, Alabama, Georgia, and Arkansas, low-income households use 36% more electricity than the low-income national average. This is influenced by local weather conditions and overall electricity use for their family size. Larger family households will naturally use more energy. However, we've already established that many rentals and low-income housing complexes have aging and unsafe living conditions. Age of the home can play a large role in energy consumption, because if the dwelling was not originally constructed to be energy efficient, energy is being used more quickly to maintain a stable environment. Part of this is what is known as the owner-renter divide. One study about the divide from the Center for Environmental and Resource Economics explores the differences between when a landlord makes a technology or building choice for energy efficiency versus when somebody who owns their own home makes that same choice. The study states the following: an investigation is carried out to evaluate if and when a homeowner makes a technology choice, for example, appliances and insulation. Occupants who own the home that they live in invest more in energy efficiency than occupants who are renters. In the study, they focused on understanding if there is a difference between the landlord that selects an appliance or technology choice for their renters when they don't have to live there and bear the energy cost versus if the tenant could choose. The study says the owner's decision leaves the tenant with potentially higher energy costs, an inefficient outcome for society. 2 plausible reasons for this inefficiency are, first, tenants do not have reliable information regarding energy efficiency, and second, owners are unable to charge a premium for energy efficiency. These decisions really come down to who pays the utility bills. If the landlord is covering the utility bill, they are more likely to make decisions that lead to greater energy efficiency. According to that same study, landlords have little incentive to invest in more costly energy-efficient devices and appliances if they aren't the ones bearing the brunt of the costs. The same could be said for builders, however. Someone that is able to be present and involved in the building of their home has much more opportunities to work with their chosen builder to increase energy efficiency and decrease strain on the environment and their finances. The families in our program generally fall into this divide, living in housing that is taking 50% of their income just to live there. According to electricchoice.com, a website that tracks average electricity use and cost per state, the average household in Virginia spends $1,008 per year on just electricity. A three-person family on the upper end of eligibility in our program is making approximately $38,880 per year. If the cost of their electric is the average of the state, they are paying an additional 2.6% of their income on electricity. Part of the goal of building more energy-efficient housing is to decrease that cost burden. Not only that, but it can lead to many health benefits. The Department of Energy states, in addition to reducing energy costs, household energy efficiency improvements result in multiple benefits for families. For example, properly insulating a home reduces heating and cooling costs, but also improves indoor air quality. This results in healthier environments and decreased sick days and hospital visits for families. We already know that living in substandard housing affects the health of these families, and it's something that has largely been studied. One particular study about the impacts of energy efficiency on internal conditions in low-income households examined the result of intervening in the energy efficiency of a low-income dwelling and found that by improving insulation, it raised indoor air temperature and brought the majority of temperatures in the home into a healthy comfort zone of 18 to 24 degrees Celsius, which is approximately 64 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and average gas usage dropped by 37%. While the study could not conclude the final effect on health over time, it did conclude that an improvement in insulation will bring indoor temperatures into what is the widely accepted healthy zone. This also includes mental health, which ties back into the importance of an affordable home on the development of children and the health of adults. This was studied by Habitat for Humanity International, and they found that the physical and mental benefits of decent housing, in a study titled Social Benefits of Homeownership and Stable Housing, the association pulled from numerous studies to note the following major findings that Habitat sees every day as people improve their living conditions through homeownership. There was a strong positive relationship between living in poor housing and a range of health problems, including respiratory conditions such as asthma, exposure to toxic substances, injuries, and mental health. Homes of owners are generally in better condition than those of renters. They also saw increases in household wealth that are associated with better health outcomes for homeowners. Low-income people who recently became homeowners report higher life satisfaction, higher self-esteem, and higher perceived control over their lives. Homeowners have a significant health advantage over renters on average. Homeowners are 2.5% more likely to have good health. When adjusting for an array of demographic, socioeconomic, and housing-related characteristics, the homeowner advantage is even larger at 3.1%. While largely the study looked at owning a home as having an effect on better health, the underlying issue is financial security, which is automatically gained by lessening the costs associated with the home, such as energy bills. Some will argue that not all low-income housing will be inefficient, but what not everyone considers is that this can lead to many other issues related to finances, such as poor health leading to medical bills or poor nutrition and cleanliness when trying to conserve energy or save money. According to a study from the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, an estimated 44% of low-income households struggle with energy insecurity, defined as an inability to meet basic household heating, cooling, and energy needs. While an average residential household spends 2.7% of its income on energy bills, low-income households pay an average of 6% of their income just for energy. This goes back to the owner-renter divide and the inefficiencies we see in housing that low-income families can barely afford to live in the first place. There are programs that are trying to fix this issue. However, they consistently run into barriers when serving a community that is already cash-strapped and often living under the poverty line. According to that same study, while low-income people are not excluded from programs offered to all residential customers, data shows that participation is limited. Well-known barriers such as high upfront costs often prevent low-income households from accessing utility rebates for efficient products. Because a majority of programs require an upfront customer investment to leverage valuable utility rebates and associated savings, they are largely inaccessible to low-income people. So while there are options out there, we still need to be discussing the response rate and how to make energy efficiency more accessible to our low-income communities. Now that we've established the issues, let's talk about how we're working to find some solutions in our program. So how does a housing nonprofit that works only with low-income families try to expand and include energy efficiency to reduce the cost burden even further when we've already established that many community programs are prohibitively expensive? I'm not sure we can talk about the solution without covering green building standards and certifications. There are many different options for housing nonprofits and builders alike when it comes to building with green standards in mind. Today, I'll give you an overview of a few of the more unique programs like Earthcraft, LEED, and Passive House. Earthcraft is a certification program for builders that build to energy-efficient green standards. According to their website, South Face and the Greater Atlanta Home Builders Association developed the Earthcraft High Performance Building Certification Program in 1999 to address the challenging energy, water, and climate conditions in the Southeast. Providing a practical blueprint for green building and sustainable development, the Earthcraft family of programs has grown from single-family homes to include multifamily units, light commercial spaces, historical preservation, and community certifications. Over the course of Earthcraft's history, more than 50,000 homes, multifamily units, light commercial spaces, and communities have been certified. The listed benefits of owning an Earthcraft home are increased quality of life through improved air quality, a smart financial decision for renters and homeowners, and conservation of energy, water, and natural resources. These are the standards that we build to here at Central Valley Habitat for Humanity, though at this time we do not hold an active certification due to the associated costs of being listed as an Earthcraft builder. However, prior to the increased cost, we were a certified organization and we retain those building standards in our current construction, just without the certification. Another option is LEED Certified Buildings. I'm going to refer to it as LEED, which stands for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. Their website states that in April of 1993, Rick Fedrizzi, David Gottfried, and Mike Italiano convened representatives from 60 firms and several nonprofits in the American Institute of Architects boardroom for the founding meeting. It was then that ideas were shared for an open and balanced coalition spanning the entire building industry and for a green building rating system, which would later become LEED. Their certification is focused on sustainable energy use. According to LEED, their vision is that buildings and communities will regenerate and sustain the health and vitality of all life within a generation. Their mission is to transform the way buildings and communities are designed, built, and operated, enabling an environmentally and socially responsible, healthy, and prosperous environment that improves the quality of life. Today, people know that if they are in a LEED-certified building, they are using less energy and water, avoiding waste, saving on maintenance costs, improving indoor air quality, offering comfort to their occupants, and creating less environmental burden on their community. They also know that they are in a building that enhances health and wellness. Now, green building has grown into a trillion-dollar industry, and LEED has become the most widely used green building program in the world. On the surface, LEED and Earthcraft certifications are very similar. However, there is one out there that is taking a slightly more extreme approach, and that is Passive House. Passive House started in Germany, and then in 2003, a woman in Illinois built and certified the first Passive House in the United States. This led to the creation of Passive House Institute US, which according to their website is now the leading passive building standard setting, research and information provider, training and certification institute in North America. What sets them apart from the other certifications is that they take energy conservation a step further. A passive house is meant to completely negate energy usage if possible, a net zero or net positive approach, because it is built with a unique set of design principles that are focused on optimizing your gains and losses based on climate. They're extremely airtight, leading to less energy leakage due to the changes in climate. And they also, if your home is, it's hot outside and you're trying to cool down your home, it's going to be easier to do so and use less energy. And the reverse is true in the winter. Passive design strategy carefully models and balances a comprehensive set of factors, including heat emissions from appliances and occupants, to keep the building at comfortable and consistent indoor temperatures throughout the heating and cooling seasons. As a result, passive buildings offer tremendous long-term benefits in addition to energy efficiency. Now that we've covered three of the certifications used for energy-efficient residential homes, what else can we do? We built Earthcraft standards, but we wanted to take it a step further. Last episode, we talked about our involvement with another local nonprofit called Give Solar, which allowed us to install solar panels on our current build in Harrisonburg. They started a solar seed fund, which allows the community to donate money and cover the costs associated with installation of the panels. We installed these previously on our build in Broadway, and during May, the peak solar month of the year, that family was able to completely cover their electricity bill. While this solution is still cost prohibitive to many low-income families, other organizations and community members can make it a possibility when resources are pooled together. The cost of solar has decreased by more than 50% in the past several years, but setup costs can still soar well over $16,000 to $25,000, way out of the price range of the average consumer. The impact of what a community and other nonprofits can do when they come together can't be underestimated as we continue to try and improve the energy efficiency of not only existing housing, but new home builds as well. Our organization is not particularly large, but by partnering with other nonprofits like Give Solar, we were able to bring energy efficiency and decrease living costs to four families already, and will continue to do so with community support. If you'd like to donate to the Solar Seed Fund, which will continue to allow us to go solar with our builds, visit Give Solar's website at www.give.solar.org. Links will be available in the show notes, so be sure to check them out. With that, we're coming to the end of today's episode. So we'll finish it out with a quote from Dr. Megan Sandel when she was testifying before Congress. "A safe, decent, affordable home is like a vaccine. It literally prevents disease. A safe home can prevent mental health and developmental problems. A decent home may prevent asthma or lead poisoning. And an affordable home can prevent stunted growth and unnecessary hospitalizations." The takeaways from today are that low-income families are not only paying a premium for substandard housing, but also substandard energy efficiency at 6% of their income compared to 2.7% of a normal household. They are often taken advantage of by landlords that aren't concerned with energy costs that they don't have to cover, in addition to the many health issues that can arise from under-insulated and inefficient homes. There are many certifications out there and programs to help, but many are still cost prohibitive. I want to leave you with the encouragement that something can be done if we can pull the community together to do it. Thank you for listening today. Come build with us over on Facebook and Instagram at Central Valley Habitat or at Central Valley VA on Twitter. We're always looking for volunteers, so if you think Habitat is for you, be sure to check us out on our website, www.centralvalleyhabitat.org. I've been your host, Kirsten Pittman, with Central Valley Habitat for Humanity. Let's get out there and build. Until next time.